What's up, everybody? We're here for Mudball Monday.
So does a good taco imply that there needs to be something shredded inside? Because all of the best tacos have something shredded.
And literally since that putt, like that, it's been over. I mean, I can't hit the hole from 7 feet. So,
dude, English muffins are elite.
Yeah, really, really good. You know, low standard deviation, low ceiling as well. Like an English muffin can only be so good, but it can also only be so bad.
I need to check the stats on this, but this feels like just a bias off the top of my head. But I feel like morning speeth is truly elite. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. This is Walker Simas and Henry Shimp coming back at you for Mudball Monday. Henry Shimp, we're getting into some extended dirt today. How the heck are you?
Peachy. Absolutely peachy.
It's going to get fiery today. So historically, going back, we do dirt all the way down the line, and then one guy tosses it to the next. We're going to go side by side today. Hit drinking side by side. So Henry's going to start us off. And if we get in the weeds here, forgive us, but at least you know what you're getting into.
Here we go. Starting off with the drinking. One of my like first-ish business golf sort of boondoggle situation the past couple days. And so naturally that entailed a lot of topos and some cocktails as well. Little whiskey sour action, and then some spicy ass margaritas. I'm a big fan of a spicy margarita. I'd never had one before where there were pieces of jalapeno, not just like slices. There were like diced jalapenos in there. So you start to get to the bottom and, you know, you start sucking a little bit too hard. You're getting like some pieces of jalapeno coming down. Interesting stuff there, to say the least. And then on top of that, well, not exactly, you know, super setting. But over the last few days, I've gotten a new shipment of Good Walk. Oh my God. It's just like a different ball game altogether. Game of the South American Clubhouse Roast. And then of course, the Mudball Half Calf. And yeah, it's just like new beans are just, I feel like a new man. You know, the bloom game is that much stronger. The flavor is that much better. Not that every morning isn't a good morning with Good Walk coffee, but it's been just truly heavenly. I like sat there this morning and like took a moment to myself after my first sip. I was like, my God, is that good?
Yeah.
So that's where I'm at on Good Walk. I'll toss it to you and let you give a little bit more color, share the website, share the code, and tell the people how they can get involved.
Oh, we'll do that at the end. I'm curious though about the cold brews. Like, I know you're not generally speaking a cold brew guy, but have you ordered them recently? When have you been using them? And when is a good morning for a nitro cold brew?
So one of the things that I like about the Bump and Run cold brew is I think the name is so apt. You know, why do you go to a Bump and Run? You hit a Bump and Run because you know what you're getting. Like, you don't want to put a wedge in play. You don't want to bring in the, am I going to chunk this? Am I going to skull this? A Bump and Run, you pull a 6 or a 7 iron, you're like, am I going to hit this to a foot? Is a cold brew going to be as good as a hot coffee? To me, not necessarily, but I know exactly what I'm getting. I can grab it straight out of the fridge. I go straight to the Bump and Run, and I know I'm going to get caffeinated. I know I'm going to enjoy it. That to me is what a cold brew is. So anytime I just need that caffeine, that's what I'm going for. It's less, slightly less overall just enjoyment of the coffee game. And it's more so like, hey, I want coffee, but I also kind of need some caffeine right now. So yeah, that's what I'm going to go for. It's predictable.
So I don't want to give a particular brand a shout out, but like the caffeinated seltzers are big right now. Like, everybody's drinking Celsius
caffeinated
and
seltzers. Oh, well, the energy drinks.
Basically. Yeah. And I've had Celsius in my day, like on a really tough morning, and there's no coffee around. But more recently, like, the weather's gotten a little bit chillier in the morning. In Florida, it just kind of sucks. Like, when it's July or August, it doesn't even try and cheat you at all. You just walk outside and start sweating. But these days, you get a good 3 or 4 hours in the morning where it's just beautiful. And being a hot coffee guy also, Recently, I've had a couple of those mornings, or honestly, more often than not, where you sip your coffee and just go, God, I'm so happy to be alive right now. It's a good moment.
When you say hot coffee guy, do you mean you like your coffee hot, or you're a coffee guy who you consider to be hot?
Both. But
Okay.
I'd
Good
say
answer.
that I think of the former first, but
Okay.
gotta have that self-love and that coffee love. They go hand in hand.
Before we forget, goodwalkcoffee.com, code the tie, TAGTIE, at checkout, 20% off Mudball Half Calf, Bump and Run Cold Brew, South America Clubhouse Roast, anything on the site.
Yeah, and I'm gaming the breakfast ball right now. And I love the breakfast ball blend. The flavor is awesome, but I've been having a lot of caffeine recently, and I miss the Bud Ball Half Calf. I had probably double the amount of beans for the full calf, and that's all I got now. So I'm eager to get back to half calf and just like having a little bit less coffee in the morning. I want that second cup, but I can't be having it. So that's where I am. Also, Big Grape getting involved last night. Had some red wine last night,
I've got some more
and
to add here. Fuck.
so I know you've been. We've Thai guy's been getting after it, but no real mixed drinks, just a bunch of red wine last night. Very good. When's the last time? I mean, I think we're both on the same page here that neither of us would claim to be wine connoisseurs or anything, but I definitely have a pretty good idea of what I like. But I had some white as well, and I just like never drink white wine. And got into that place. Shit, I'm forgetting the name of it. That Filipino, like kind of grab and go place, dumplings and like vegetable curry and those spicy bao buns and stuff. It was really good. So it was nice to have some wine again. I feel like we did the flip flop. I was having tequila and mixed drinks down in Miami, and now I'm having wine. You're having topo and tequilas.
Yeah, as you know, I'm not a wine guy. Where I was the last few days, there was certainly wine on hand, but it's just not my play. I go a different direction. But what I was going to add, and we'll roll this straight into the eating. You mentioned Big Grape. It's a big week for just the big purple food industry. One of my absolute gamers is Big Purple Sweet Potato, and kind of a harbinger there on Big Purple Sweet Potato. All through the summer, and I guess this is maybe a Texas thing, I'd noticed that sweet potatoes, the purple ones in particular, were freaking tiny. I mean, I'm talking like these are damn near fingerlings. And I'm used to these being like the size of a russet, like
Yeah.
a nice solid sized potato. You bake the thing, put some butter in it. That's kind of what I'm looking for. And I figured it was like a weather thing. Like it's too hot and the potatoes are just small. It is what it is. Well, literally, like snap the fingers, like it's like a little boy goes from age 10 to 19 all of a sudden. These things are like the size of my head. And I'm just out here really questioning, like, where's the quality control, fellas, from Big Purple Sweet Potato? I don't know what to do with that thing. Size matters. Okay. I don't know what to do with a tiny little purple sweet potato. I don't know what to do with one the size of my head. Like, what do you do with a basketball sized sweet potato? I'm really disappointed because I've been off the sweet potato game here for like a couple months, really. I mean, there have still been some in the mix, different varietals, of course. We're not going there today. I'll spare everyone. But I really have been wanting purple sweet potatoes. And like, guys, I need something that's somewhere between like 300 and 500 grams, not 100, and then make the straight jump to 1,000. So I don't know what to say. I'm confused. I want to get back on the game, but what is a guy going to do?
What's your take on the skin situation? 'Cause when I get sweet potatoes these days, I'm just looking for, I want the prep time to be the shortest possible. So lately I've been off of the purples 'cause the skin is,
It's Stitch.
it's pretty thick. And so I have a really good knife that I love using, but A, I feel like there's more waste than like one of the just regular orange sweet potatoes or russets or anything that you want to do in that regard. I just use a standard peeler for those. Very easy.
Oh, I'm a skin guy. I don't waste any skin.
So but the purple, the skin is so thick. Maybe you prepare it a different way than I do, but
I'm a
I
dog.
have.
I just crunch that skin right down.
Look, it's not my forte, but
Are
I respect it.
you a cut the crust off a sandwich sort of guy? I'm starting to get that vibe.
Well, that those people plus people who don't eat their crust
You are
piss me off.
sidestepping my question.
I am, but it is true. I eat shrimp heads. What else do I do that?
Do you actually eat shrimp heads?
Oh yeah, totally.
Oh,
Have to.
respect. Good. Great. Man, I'm glad we cleared that up. Those who, I
But
mean, the best sushi that, well, that's just bullshit. But those that can't eat a shrimp head, like a fried shrimp head at a sushi place, I mean, get out of here. That's like absolute magic.
so if you're eating like Wonder Bread, I do understand that the crust isn't that good. But if you're eating like real bread, the crust of the bread is actually like the best part. And the crust on the pizza,
Is the best part if it's a good pizza.
if
Yes.
it's a good pizza, right? You're insane, but
Hey, one more thing from me on the eating front, since we're talking about breads here. Been on a serious, let's call it breakfast handheld kick.
okay.
Different vehicles going on.
But like the same breakfast stuff, just different vehicles.
Más o menos. Bagels, English muffins, went with a couple English muffin sandwiches this morning. Big Apple got in the game as well.
Dude, English muffins
Breakfast,
are elite.
yeah,
Really
really
good.
good. Low standard deviation, low ceiling as well. Like an English muffin can only be so good, but it can also
Yes.
only be so bad. Breakfast tacos, I think it depends on who you ask. Like I might be eating way too many, and I might be just far under quota. I mean, I think it's like kind of a two a week, two times per week with about three per is about my clip right now. And yeah, I think like certain people you ask, they'd be like, come on, these rookie numbers. And I think some people would be like, what exactly are you doing here? Eating six breakfast tacos a week. But personally, I think it's a really good spot to be. I'm going to be eating them tomorrow morning as well. So,
So, do you ever eat like salty and sweet breakfast together? Like, I know you do the overnight oats, but I know you
always.
also do like breakfast tacos or eggs or whatever. So, do you eat, or smoothies? Do you eat all three of those things together at times, or is it one day is one and the other day is another?
Yeah, this is a really good question. There are times when it's just like the overnight oats, and so I guess we're just going sweet there. But if I go savory, whether it's breakfast, lunch, or dinner, I am a big fan. I don't consider myself to be someone that has a massive sweet tooth. Like I don't eat a ton of desserts and things necessarily, but I mean, sweet and salty is objectively elite. And so whether it's an apple or maybe like with dinner tonight, I'm planning on having a little kombucha on the side. I love having the compliment, but then yeah, like I don't then like need dessert after necessarily. I don't need sweet on its own necessarily. I appreciate the compliment of the two. And so yes, like if it's a weekend breakfast and I have time to kind of do what I please, then yeah, like there's gonna be kind of both going on. Like this morning it was a couple English muffin sandwiches with a nice apple. So I need to get I had a bagel about 2.5 weeks ago in New York, that rainbow bagel, absolute gas,
You
and
hammered that on the
have
story.
not, oh dude, it was sick. Have not gotten back on the bagel grind since then, but I need to throw a big bagel some love. Because I'm a bagel fan, but I've probably had three of them this year, something, two or three bagels this year. And I think that's a little low. Like a bagel deserves more love than that.
I agree with that take. Yeah, but it's not an everyday, it should not be an everyday situation. It When I go get a good bagel, I want like a bacon, egg, and cheese on and everything toasted, and I want either cream cheese or butter schmear on like a cinnamon raisin or something, and then I'm done for 2 months, you know?
I respect that. Double up and just like get your fix. It's good stuff.
Yeah,
What
exactly.
what's been fixing you up lately on the eating front?
So I guess st I want to start with chili oil. As I've told you, I've kind of been really, at least I've been doing a lot of home cooking, but have been entirely off any sort of oils. No olive oils, clearly. I mean, come on, no seed oils, but trying to cook with butter as much as I can. And then picked up these dumplings last night with a buddy and just covered in chili oil. And I love chili oil. I mean, this was David Chang 101 was, I guess, when I started forming my chili oil passion, but it was just a little bit too much. It was very clearly the thing that kind of made me feel like shit after my meal, at least for a little while. And I'm curious how you feel about it. Like, I've had some really great breakfast dishes with eggs, just like a little bit of that, the like crispy garlic and that's a really nice situation.
Gas, absolute gas. Yeah, so a couple things, three things on chili oil. First and foremost, fire. I love chili oil. Second, you're barking up the right tree. Like, you have to use it responsibly. Third, what I used to do, because I'm totally with you, that I usually it is mixed. I've looked for it without a seed oil, like having the base be something other than rape seed or whatever, which is just like the worst name of all time. Rape
Yes.
seed oil. Like, what are we doing? Anyway, look for one without that, and it just doesn't really exist. But I do still really like chili oil. So I probably haven't bought any chili oil in 3 or 4 months, but it's coming time. Like, I need to get some soon. And so oftentimes I would drain the oil actually, and basically just turn it into like a complete chili crisp or crunch. But what I've started doing, I've seen some people do this, is rather than just like drizzle it on top of eggs or something, leave the oil in, use like a nice little spoon, and scoop it into the pan, and then fry those bastards in the chili oil. That's like a
So,
total gangster play to rather than put it on top of your eggs, get the oil in there and then crack the egg straight into the chili oil. And then it kind of grabs it up underneath. And it's like a little surprise, a little pizzazz there. So, and if you really want to go hard, then you put it on top as well. But usually just frying it in to me is good. And it's potent enough that it holds its flavor. Some things, if you fry it in it or something, it kind of loses it. But the chili oil has enough strength and flavor that it's going to maintain, even if it's kind of sitting underneath.
yeah, it sounds like a Thai guy's market opportunity. We'll create some chili oil with some ghee or something. We'll figure it out.
I mean, shit,
Coming.
why not just straight sesame oil? Like, I'm okay with sesame, and like, why do we not just put that? I mean, that would be just fire.
It's a horrible investment because it would sit in your pantry for like 3 years. You would need one bottle every 3 years. Sesame oil is so powerful. You know,
VC style. Not every investment has to be good.
that is it's a nice pushback. I'll take it. Eating. All right, what else? I've just had a ton of tacos this week, so happy to chat about tacos. Maybe we just power rank them, like power rank our first couple protein options. And I'll start here. Let's go with some proteins that you're going to get pretty much everywhere. Let's not get into the beef tongues and cheeks and stuff like that, just the carne asadas and the pastors and the carnitas. You know what I miss? I haven't had a barbacoa taco in a while.
So it's important that you say that. Being in Texas, specifically Austin, but really anywhere in Texas, like, you're going to get barbacoa anywhere and everywhere. And I'm not saying it's objectively the best, but I am saying if you aren't a big fan, you don't know a taco. Like, to me, I can't get tacos. Breakfast, if it's just purely breakfast tacos, it's a different conversation. But let's say it's not. I can't get tacos and not have at least one of them be a barbacoa, because good barbacoa is so good. And one of the things that I love about it is no one's out here trying to get too fancy with barbacoa because they know it's so good. It's like just super simple. I mean, the most complex barbacoa taco I can think of in Austin is Veracruz, and they put a little bit of watermelon radish on it. Basically, everybody else, it's just straight, like, it's barbacoa, it's a little bit of onion, it's a little bit of cilantro, and yeah, I mean, watermelon radish, it's like a garnish, if anything. But it does add pretty nice crunch and flavor to me. So, I mean, for me, barbacoa does take the one slot every single time. I think where I would move from there is that, like, I mean, look, chicken, it's easy to kind of start to say, like, hey, chicken, is a little, it's just chicken. It's everywhere. But a good chicken taco, there's so many ways you can go with it. But it's not my number two. That's my number three. My number two, and this is the higher standard deviation. Like, if a carnitas taco isn't really good, it's not number two. But if it is really good, it makes a play at number one. I mean, a good carnitas taco is just freaking banging. And it's the same deal as barbacoa. And I think there's a common theme here of, like, the good ones don't need No one's out here putting cheese on a carnitas taco or really anything extra special or some silly sauce. You know, it's just like it's carnitas. It's barbacoa. You know, like we're keeping it damn simple. And I think for me, that's what you're really after. I mean, if you have good, let me make this as simple as possible. If you got a good chicken situation going on, if you can make solid carnitas, barbacoa, and you've got good tortillas, we don't need to do any further thinking on the matter here. Like that's just an A1 meal, and I could eat it every day of the week.
So, does a good taco imply that there needs to be something shredded inside? Because all of the best tacos have something shredded. But you know what I really crave is you just take a nice rotisserie chicken or something and you just get a handful of, nice juicy chicken and some crispy skin and then just one dab of salsa and down the hatch. That to me sounds amazing, but I don't see it out there very much. And I don't, that's not what comes to mind as, an elite taco. I've just loved the tacos that I've had this week, just all down the middle of the line. A good carnitas is like a sponge where you could wring it out of all its liquid, but as soon as it makes contact with the juices again, it just soaks it right back up. So, in terms of like, the process of actually eating a taco, carnitas is better than barbacoa in my mind. Like barbacoa is pretty leaky, Carnitas holds the liquid pretty well.
The cow gets my vote here, but look, they're both
Just
freaking
slightly.
awesome. I don't really care. That's the vote I get, but like this is not like a presidential election is these days where there are no good options. There are two fantastic options in this situation. Last thing I'm going to say about tacos here before we move on. I don't know why it took me so long, but we've got another guy working with us in the office now, a little bit older than me. And there's this freaking taco truck that it's between like 9:20 and 9:40. Every morning, it rolls up pretty close to our office, and there's this horn that's like the stupidest noise you've ever heard. It's like doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo, or something stupid like that. And I'm just like, what is that? It's like an ice cream truck, but like so much stupider. And finally, this guy, like 2 weeks into being in the office, he was like, all right, I'm not letting this happen again. Like, we're just going to go see what this thing is about. And it's this taco truck. There is some construction going on around us. Everyone can fill that in for themselves of what's going on here. So roll up and just like the thing that you're into, just straight up street tacos. It was like, you know, it was one of those like, just, hey, let's just go do this. Like I just had breakfast about 45 minutes ago and decided that three tacos before lunch was just a great play, which it is. But yeah,
Jesus.
it's a good play.
What about reading? What you've been reading?
Yeah, you know, I'm in a little bit of a interesting spot with reading. I mean, I've always been just like a one book at a time, kind of one after the other. Don't really quit on a lot of books, don't really reread a lot of books. And I've kind of just been like cleaning house, like taking inventory of where we're at, changing the game a little bit. I've been working on a few different things. I've got one book going right now that's a reread. I've got one new one. And then I've got one that is also a new one, I guess. But I'm still working on the Sleepy Hollow book, just kind of going through that nice and slowly, really taking it in. And what I'm enjoying about that one is, you know, because there's so much information that I already have some knowledge on, but it's kind of an enrichment exercise. I'm like double hauling it. It's like, okay, well, I know what a short template is. I've you know, been on the record multiple times with the shorts. But use that as an example. Like I know what a short is. Now I'm learning a little bit deeper on the short specifically as Sleepy and kind of the concept behind it. And then that leads me to want to like learn even more about it. So that's kind of been the theme there is, you know, it's like deepening my knowledge, and then by doing so in the context of just Sleepy Hollow and C.B. McDonald, it then makes me want to like really kind of dive in even further and learn as much as I can about different templates and some of the courses that C.B. did, sort of some of C.B.'s history. That's been a fun read, so really enjoying that one.
You've also like really always you've also just downplayed your cumulative knowledge on architecture and stuff, but the amount of courses that you've played either in competition or otherwise where you like are curious enough to pick up four or five things on a given golf course, you're well into level three, which is just like putting a bunch of things together from courses that you have played sometimes in multiple different contexts and then know some history about. where like you're getting danger. Henry's in the dangerous territory now. It's like gonna put him in the ring at some point. Henry,
I
here's a
respect the
D.
call.
Henry, here's a
I'll
DA.
add
Go
one
build
thing.
some shit.
Yeah, I appreciate it. I'll add one thing on top. I'm definitely a layer deeper than a couple of the fellas I was playing with these last couple of days. Great guys, but don't know a ton about course architecture. We're standing on like the fourth tee the first day, and someone's just like, trying to come up with something to say about the golf course. He's like, "Man, I really love the way the clouds sit up there and kind of stack up above the fairway." And I was like, "Yeah, I'm with you. It's good stuff." It
That's
was,
some Fazio shit. Just, man,
it was.
if we level this shit out just a hair, those clouds will sit up there real nice.
Yeah.
So, oh,
Raise the
good.
tee box a little bit, put you at the level of the clouds. Maybe
Yes.
that's probably Foz's ultimate dream is like, I mean, if he ever built a mountain course where the clouds sit nice and low in there, like Roaring Gap, you get some foggy days where you're playing in the clouds. He wants to build a tee box on a cloud.
I've asked multiple people what it's like doing restoration work where part of a hole's character it relies on tees being built up like 8 or 9 feet. And I'm like, well, what do you do in that scenario where you don't want raised tees anymore, so you have to lower the teeing ground by 8 feet or raise everything up to match it, or you have to just like regrade an entire fairway. And the answers are always so interesting there. So it's like undoing artificial, just the dark ages of golf course architecture work. That's tough stuff sometimes. So what have I been reading? Oh, dude, I've been reading just a native Austin, Texas guy's work. Somebody you're really familiar with, Harvey Pinnock's stuff. I'm reading his green book right now. Just kind of like a, it feels like a vacation book. Like you're not really trying to come away with anything. You're just kind of reading it to read it. But I love the way that he structures chapters. Like I don't really like really long chapters. And he takes it to a completely different level where it's like some of his chapters are like 3 lines. And, I was reading one yesterday. It's kind of been a theme just in life recently, is just kind of back to the basics. Like, all right, dude, grip and stance. Like, it's not that complicated. Just do the simple stuff really well, and the rest just kind of works out for itself. Same thing with like feel too. You know how like all of feel is built on top of good fundamentals. Let's say it's like if you do enough reps with good fundamentals, you'll just have a much better chance of achieving what we call, feel. But
I have such a deep knowledge of that because I think that like certain parts of the game, if we're talking about golf specifically here, certain parts of the game, I'm like pretty far down the spectrum if we're going to take pros out of the equation of quality and have great field built on good fundamentals. And then I'm at like the other end of the spectrum with other things where it's like, yeah, I have no feel with my chipping because the fundamentals are just they're just not good. It's just not good.
yeah, but it can be applied to anything, like your routine or the way you go to work or your fitness or the way you train for a certain thing, the way you date somebody. Like all of these things are can be applied back to that same principle. Anyways, he had this one chapter in the book which was like 2 lines. It was hilarious. It's like an entire chapter that fit at the very bottom of one of the right-hand pages. And it was called Wasting Your Time. That was what the chapter was called. And the quote was, "Unless you have a reasonably good grip and stance, anything you read about the golf swing is completely useless." And I was like, God, that is so true. You just dedicate your entire life to this thing. And if you don't have 2 very basic things that take 5 minutes to learn handled, you just, all that time's going to be wasted. So,
Yeah,
yeah, I
that's
haven't
great.
been,
That's like
I've,
alignment, grip, setup. If you're not good there, especially you haven't been like practicing a ton, it's like it's irrelevant. If you're going to be thinking a swing thought, but your aim's like 30 yards left every time, like no, it's just not even worth doing.
yeah, you could go out and putt all afternoon And if you're not very deliberate about a couple of things that are really easy to check, congrats, you hit a bunch of putts, but did you learn anything? Probably not. So yeah, I enjoy his stuff. Just kind of a fun reading week. And then I'm also, I've been, dude, I feel like I've had my, it's been one of those weeks. I feel like I've had my AirPods in like half of my waking hours, which is not a good feeling. And I went Goggins with it this morning. I played golf this afternoon, so it was nice to just kind of get away from the just the looking at it. I feel like I've been looking at a screen all week. So, but I was thinking about music as well. Somebody's been asking me about the music I've been listening to, and I'm like, I feel like I have been so off the music lately. I don't have an artist that I'm like super geeked out about keeping up with a new album or nothing like that. Same with podcasts as well. I haven't been listening to any other podcasts. So in a bit of a dry spell as far as listening goes. So
What about thinking? What's been on the dome?
I've got some beef with Apple Podcasts. Curious if like just doing the website, going in to do our tags or whatnot. If you, I see that most of our listeners go through Apple Podcasts. So if you're searching up an episode that has been done in the past, any podcaster stuff, you can search for that exact episode. But if you want to find it on their profile, you literally have to refresh next 10, next 10, next 10, next 10, next 10. So I just, it seems like a very easy fix that Spotify has clearly just nailed, and Apple Podcasts is behind. So, big Steve Jobs fan, I think he'd be thoroughly disappointed. So, just want to call that out. I'm excited for the Ryder Cup. I think the Team USA, so
Takes to
much of
come.
Team USA makes so much sense right now. I do think having Harmon and Brooks kind of off to the side is weird. Like all of these pairings, like the Cantlay and Xander, like that makes sense. You know, Wyndham and Ricky, like that makes sense. JT and Spieth makes sense. All the way down the line. But then I forget that Brooks and Brian Harmon have probably known each other. Like they both grew up in the Southeast. They're like about the same age. These guys have probably been playing golf around each other forever. And I never really thought about that. So curious to see what their dynamic looks like out there. What else? I'm trying to think what else I've been thinking about. Been doing some AI art, been trying out some of that, and it's has not been successful at all, but it's been very, very interesting. I think I can't help but thinking about what it's going to be like 10 years from now, because you can do things very easily now, even though they're not the way I want them to be, that you can do things now that I've just never seen before. So that's really cool. And that's it. That'll wrap. What are you thinking about?
Thinking about Michael Block showing up at the Ryder Cup, that's definitely one. Thinking
Good
about
man.
inertia, thinking about the law of inertia, the way that it applies to life. It's really easy when you're like on, when you're on stuff, you're on your habits and stuff to just kind of keep it rocking. And then it's also really easy when you're struggling to get back on horse to do it. But you gotta know that that's inertia acting on you. You know, you gotta either keep riding the wave or you know, get off the freaking board and swim the other direction. I think most significantly, you know, I wrote about this a couple weeks ago, and if people haven't been checking out our writing, thetiepodcast.com, check out the blog or whatever you want to call it. I wrote about the peaks and valleys of golf, just in a general sense, and how, you know, you're going to go through times when it feels pretty darn easy, and this is applicable to the game at large and also specific skills within the game. And then you're going to go through times when it's just like it feels really, really difficult. And my putting has been so bad, like so bad. I'm just like, I've kind of, well, I actually, completely made peace with myself this morning. And this is where I'm halfway serious about what I was writing about, because I am so undoubtedly at a point of rock bottom that it truly can only be an inflection point. Like you can only, it can always get worse, a wise man once said, but to some degree, it can only get so bad. I just don't see the world where I cannot lag a 10 footer to 8 inches and I'm not missing an 8 inch putt, you know? And right now I'm not lagging 10 footers, but I might as well, because if I try to make it, it's not going in. That could arguably, yesterday, arguably that could have been said for 4.5 and 5 footers. It's just like my back nine, it was just, it had kind of become this like internal joke that I was like playing pretty well, hitting it nice, like getting the par fives because, you know, hit it well enough to just birdie the par fives. Chipping great. Chipping has been great. I hold out one from about 30 yards yesterday. Yeah, it's just fucking classic. I had 2 30-yard pitches on par fives yesterday. Made one of them and hit the other like 4 inches, almost made it, you know? So chipping's just been off the hook.
The second that you make 3 10-footers in a row, chipping
is still gone. The fucking window. That's why I've got the bump and run, you know, talking about the bump and run cold brew.
Damn, the bump and run
golf shots a thing as well. But it was like this internal joke of like 10 footer for par on 10. Nope. 8 footer for birdie on 11. Nope. 6 footer for birdie on 12. Nope. You know, just like slowly getting closer and closer to the hole. And then finally the climax of it all was like hit it to about 4 feet on 17 for birdie downhill. Like I didn't really know which way it was going, but it was clearly like, hey, look, if you just play this in the middle of the hole and hit it straight, it will go in. And it just didn't go in. And that was kind of the ultimate, like, all right, like exit stage left. I'm just going to, this last hole, I'm going to hit the fairway, hit the green. I'm going to kick my ball up there near the hole and I'm going to pick it up because this is just a fucking joke. So that's where we're at with the putting. And I'm just, you know, I do know the origin of this. Like there is no doubt about it. I played 6 rounds competitively this summer. The first two, my putting was like, it was good. Nothing special, but good enough. Second two is good. The US amateur, like I put the ball well. No, didn't like rein a million putts in necessarily, but I made some good putts and I didn't miss anything inside of like 6 feet. So cannot say anything other than it was pretty darn solid. And then like an idiot, I found some time to practice before the mid-am. And you can't do this. You can't do this. You can't cram for the exam if you haven't been showing up to class the entire semester. You're not making an A. You're not making a B. You're not making a C. You can't do it. Just go in there and let it ride. I decided to practice. I'm doing fucking putting drills with a friend of mine who's on the Corn Ferry Tour in Charlotte 2 days before the mid-am. Like I felt like anything inside 12 feet was good in the practice rounds. I mean, just dead center. And what do you know? Like third hole of the tournament, I've got 5 feet for par, just total air ball. And literally since that putt, like that, it's been over. I mean, I can't hit the hole from 7 feet. So, you know, it's kind of a multiple question, multiple choice question here. Like A is the arm lock claw. You know, I've been thinking about that. B is hypnosis. I've been thinking about hitting up our boy, Michael Campbell, and just like hypnotizing myself before every putt and seeing what happens. C is lefty. Been thinking about going lefty, and D is all of the above. And you know, it's a hard split between B and D. I would say I might just go hypnosis, but I might just go ahead and do lefty arm lock claw with hypnosis to see if that gets me, you know, off the snide. But all that bullshit aside, I will say like this is the whole point of what I was talking about. Like if I were putting the ball great right now, a month from now, I would probably be putting it worse than what I will be in current form, if that makes sense. Like I think I can only go up from here. And so I'm beyond the point. I'm playing tomorrow, driving over to Dallas, playing Brook Hollow, which is pretty cool. Looking forward to that. And like, I'm not even going to sit here and worry about it, because it's like, if I go out there and start missing every 6 footer, like that, you know, that's the expectation,
whatever,
right? Like that's what I'm probably going to do. And so it can kind of only get better than that. So what's there to be nervous about? You know, if you've been shanking the ball, you can only go up. As long as you don't hit that hosel, you can only do better. So that was a sesh right there. That was a thinking session. But yeah, the putter is clearly just so deeply infiltrated my dome. Yeah, lefty arm lock claw with hypnosis. That's where we're
We're
headed.
going to call you soft close. You know those soft close drawers where you can slam the door shut, but it'll close real nice. You can't close a door any more than that. That's where you are
Right.
right now. Somebody's got to open that cupboard eventually,
Yeah,
you know?
exactly. Exactly.
All right.
So, hey,
Hey,
let's do some quick
Ryder Cup
Ryder
talk.
Cup. Yeah. So, where are you at? Like, interesting week. Golf has been like, there's been nothing going on here for quite some time. We've got the Solheim going up, which has been great. It's
Yeah.
Saturday evening right now as we're recording, 8-8. So super fired up to see where that goes. The full bevy of Americans are making their way over. Jordan just had a baby. I mean, that's something to follow. Like, give me a take. You do a take and then send it to me. I'll give him a couple and we'll get out of here.
Well, I think this is kind of like the stars aligning here. So, Spieth's got baby syndrome. I don't think there's any chance he makes anything within 8 feet, certainly not under pressure this week, which gives JT time to shine.
Hypnosis.
Like it's a little flip-flop going on here. So I'm excited to see that, but I'm also excited to see just the socials. Like I'm excited to see my boy ZJ just with a piece in his ear and lots of free merch. I'm excited to see that. I'm excited to hear the food scene from Scheffler and Burns. Like these guys probably would be prime candidates for a Mudball Monday. I think if anybody could hang on the dirt talk, it would be Scheffler and Burns. So I hope they do some Italy food talk.
Scheffler's a Chipotle guy, though.
But they're out more than the regular guy, I feel like. They are each city they go to, they're making an effort to get a scene. In fact, I was talking with Chris, Goodwalk Chris, and he said that Scheffler was really into the coffee and was like wanting,
He is a
very
big
adamant,
coffee guy. You're right.
like adamant on getting deep into the weeds, not just like, I want a latte. He was like, I want to know everything about what goes into this from your perspective. So no, I'm all in on those two. Are there any matches you were just dying to see that you think won't happen?
Well, it's funny you say that because that's exactly where I was going to go. So what I'm going to do here to kind of wrap this episode up is I'm going to give a kind of bull base and bear case for the final singles match of like the one that's going to close the thing out. That doesn't mean the anchor match necessarily. It's like the seventh match off could be the one that kind of decides the thing that like we're tracking down the final three holes. Like you never really know how things are going to shake out. But so starting with my base case here, and this is going to sound a little ridiculous that this is my base, Brooks and Rom. I think that's like kind of what you expect. They're going to be later in the draw. It would be awesome. It'd be great. But we've already seen it this year, and I'm not saying that Brooks isn't into it, but I don't think it's quite going to do for us what certain matches would do, right? Like, having JT down the stretch, been playing like shit, but there's just no way he's getting wiped by anybody. If it's Ryder Cup on the line, like he's gonna find something deep within. And so, I think the Brooks Rom match would be like a really cool one. That's kind of like what you would expect. But ultimately, I think it probably is gonna fall like slightly flat for us. So I'll just leave that there. My bear case. So this is just the ultimate like, guys, how did this happen? Like, this fucking sucks. Wyndham and Matt Fitzpatrick. Two things here. One, I'm not purely throwing shade to Wyndham, but that is what I'm doing. So okay. A, I think he gets just smacked by Fitzpatrick. I don't want any part of Fitzpatrick playing anyone that matters. I think that guy is just dangerous. He's rock solid off the tee. He's just good in general, and that guy can flat putt his golf ball. And so in match play, especially in Europe, I don't want any part of Fitzpatrick. And then like the Wyndham thing is just, it is what it is. Like, does anyone really need to see Wyndham down the stretch when it matters? Like, I personally don't. Maybe people disagree. But I'm not really there for that one. And then finally, going to my bull case, the one that I really want to see. If we could get a little late Rory and Ricky going to decide the Ryder Cup. That's the ultimate, like these guys care so much about it. Everybody wants to see this. It would be like, there would be so much respect, yet they would be going at it. I mean, the fist pumps would be flying. All of the guys would be so behind that. Like, I think those guys probably have the respect of their peers more than like anybody else out there, I feel like. And so that would just be such a great match to see those two punch for punch, back and forth, whole thing on the line. It would just be like, especially in a world where golf, pro golf has not felt very pure, quote unquote,
Yeah.
in quite some time. That would be like a really pure way to decide a Ryder Cup. So that's my bull, bear, and base for final matches down the stretch at Ryder Cup. One more thing on JT and Spieth. It is very much within the solution set. You know, you talk about just had a baby. JT is, I mean, he's JT. Like he sucks right now. Is he going to suck in the Ryder Cup? I don't think so, but it could happen. What do
Right.
those guys do? Like, what happens if they go out and it's just like they get to the fifth tee and they look over at ZJ and they're just like, corn man, like
Help.
we don't have it. But they're not losing 5 and 4, right? Like, it's just not going to happen. But what do
Yeah.
they like? What wrench do they go for? Like, is it shit talk? Is it like, you know, does Spieth start like putting left-handed just to get in people's domes? Like, where do they go if there's just objectively no golf?
No, I think I'm about to like tell the future here. I just think this is going to be the most exhausting Ryder Cup of all time for Spieth and JT. JT, I think they're both just going to have to work super, super hard on the golf course. I'd be curious to see how different it is just from an exhaustion, from a pace standpoint on a week like this versus a major. Maybe let's just say being in the mix all 4 days at a major. I'd be really interested to ask that question and get like a really honest answer. And I'm sure Ryder Cup to Ryder Cup, it's different. But the general theme this week with Spieth and JT, I think, is just exhausting. Like they're just going to have to pace themselves. I think that there's a real chance that there's going to be a lot of weight on each of their shoulders at certain times, whereas other matches just may not feel or appear like that. So, yeah.
And another important thing to track here, I'm just pulling up the weather for Rome. It's like mid 80s, and the coolest it gets. I mean, the weather looks perfect, like lows of 62, highs of 85. No beanie. I mean, Beanie Spieth is just absolutely dangerous. And I
Yeah.
mean, look, maybe that's where they go. 80 degrees out there, they're just objectively sucking. And Spieth says, you know what, Michael, fuck it. It's hot as shit, and I'm putting the beanie on. That would be elite if he, you know, an 80 degree heat said, hey, it's beanie season.
I need to check the stats on this, but this feels like just a bias off the top of my head. But I feel like morning Spieth is truly elite. Like you send Spieth off first tee time of the day, there's still dew out there. We're getting like worm cams with the dew just being erased as the ball enters the center of the cup the first like 6 holes in a row.
Well,
I.
it brings the field back to him. Like, when it's perfect and 86 degrees in the afternoon and everyone's just like striking on all cylinders, like Spieth is still like sliding around and like club looks like sh shit and like slipping in his hands. There's just a bunch of junk. But in the
Yeah.
morning, that kind of happens to everybody, you know? So it kind of levels the playing field. It's like, you know, when shitty putters objectively become better on aerated greens, you know, that's Spieth in the morning.
That
When
is.
you throw some shit in there, all of a sudden it's like that is your course.
I haven't thought about that in a long time, but that is a really true thing that I remember from growing up. It's like this motherfucker had the best putting round of his life, and it was just like the greens were a war zone.
I mean, close the episode on it. We just solved my putting. I just need to go seek out. I mean, I don't think anyone necessarily seeks out aerated greens, but I just need to go have a couple matches against people on aerated greens to get the confidence rolling again. Shitty putters putt relatively better on aerated greens.
And how do you become a better putter? See the ball go in the hole. And that's
Mudball
it.
Monday.
We'll see you
That's what we
next
got
week.
for you.